You're seriously considering, you know, sort of between transferring, I suppose going back to where you were, and obviously the NBA draft, you're probably going to be looking for a bigger role than this team can give you.
And probably a bigger paycheck than a two-way contract will give you.
Well, yeah, possibly.
Sure.
And, you know, you never know. I mean, a guy gets hurt and then maybe, you know, because like I think one of the scenarios that would make a certain amount of sense to me is if Indiana could find somebody that's hurt. That would be, you know, willing to come in, take a scholarship, redshirt. Think about Josh Newkirk, his first year. Indiana knew he wasn't going to play that 15,
he just came off knee surgery, right?
Yeah. But the idea was you come, you spend a year. As you get healthy, you start learning things. And then when Yogi's gone, you're the man. But
they kind of already have that in Ja'Kai Newton.
Newton, you're hoping is healthy and able to kind of crack into the rotation, even if it's the back end this year. But I'm just, you know, that
so
even those
last
those
two
cases
spots,
are still kind of few and far between.
So the last two spots you're looking at more of the developmental position because you don't have enough basketballs and enough minutes?
I think the one, I mean, we've talked about it before. I think the one piece you really still need is one more post player. You know, I mean, even
the
if
Michael
you,
Durr.
Even if you are going to play more, you know, sort of, I don't want to call it small ball because Mackenzie Mbako is not, he's not small. He's 6'8". He's a legitimate 6'8". He's got a real wingspan. But if you're going to, Even if the plan is to, you know, to use an example from this season, do more of what Purdue did, which is start with two bigs, but then be comfortable flipping to more of a combo, you know, kind of outside in four. Mason Gillis would go play the four.
And Mbako can do that same role.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, you don't bring in like Bryson Tucker and Luke Goody and still intend to play basically exclusively two big basketball. So the point is, you know, even if your idea is Ballo and Renew probably start together, and then, you know, as you kind of the main sort of avenue for easing the minutes on those two guys is going to Mbako at the four, or even Goody at the four, you know, Tucker at the three, a third guard at the three, whatever, and playing just a little bit smaller, a little bit more fluid and dynamic. You still need one more player there because you don't want to wind up in a situation where somebody gets their ankle stepped on.
It always
happens. And you only have one true post player for a month. You can't afford that. It doesn't have to be somebody. And this is, again, it's a hard needle to thread. Most guys don't go into the portal to play less.
Right.
But, you know, you're looking for somebody that can give you, you know, 10 to 15 quality Big Ten minutes, and some nights it'll only be 10, you know, maybe even less. On the nights when, like, Mbako's shooting well, Tucker's a mismatch, or, you know, Goody's hitting threes, and it's like, yeah, well, we're going to stay a little smaller tonight because it's working. But you look at, like, Ballo, for example. I mean, Khalil Ware, if I'm remembering the numbers rightly, I think Khalil Ware only had one game in the last 8 or 9 last season where he didn't play at least 32 minutes. I don't know that Ballo plays quite that much. You know, and obviously nobody plays as much as Trayce Jackson-Davis. I mean, he was like second in the Big Ten behind.
It was 36 and a half minutes.
Yeah, it was. I mean, ridiculous. In terms of like percentage of minutes used, it was
never
90,
had foul trouble.
It was like 91 minutes, 91%, which is an insane number for a post player.
Let me ask you a dumb question. Mock drafts not treating Khalil Ware the best. He come back? Can he? No? Yes?
No, I don't think so.
Ship has sailed.
I'm assuming if he said.
Now, legally, he can, right?
I think so.
Because if you sign with an agent, you can do that. Because
as long as he hasn't, you know, crossed any sort of Rubicon in terms of, like, you know, there's certain limits on, like, you know, which agents you can sign with and what agents can do for you and all that kind of stuff. As long as he's not sort of over the river with any of that, I think in theory he can. But listen, first of all, mock drafts are what they are. Like, the workout process is just beginning. The NBA season's still ongoing. So, like, in terms of the pre-draft process, the only people that are in it right now are the teams that are going to be picking in the first 14 spots, 15 spots anyway. And, I mean, he was – I talked to one NBA person about him the other day, and I got the sense that it was kind of like a 20 to 35 kind of range was maybe where it – you know, that it was like sort of – it was those teams that were maybe starting to fill up the – you know, the notebook a little bit more on him. And first of all, you know, the last first round pick last year still got well over $2 million a year guaranteed across the life of the deal. You're not going to get a $2 million NIL deal from just about anybody.
There you go, kids.
Like, I mean, I'm sure somebody out there's gotten $2 million, but, you know, NIL paycheck payday stories are like fishing stories. Just enough of them are true that very few of them can be debunked. I do not believe that there have been many, if any, $2-plus million NIL players.
What is the biggest one you've heard? Just curious.
I mean, over a million, certainly. But, I mean, it's, you know, it's that's adding up everything. Like, that's adding up. And I think Oscar Tshiebwe was the one that supposedly Kentucky got $2 million a year together to
keep him. The interesting thing about Tshiebwe was, and I read this story, when they went to the Atlantis tournament, since he was from – he wasn't a U.S. citizen.
He had to do it outside.
That's what – Edie's big complaint was like, "Hey man, I think they're starting to figure out
some workarounds
right.
for this stuff, because it's not fair that you know. I mean, basketball is an international game. You can't look at these kids and say, oh, well, all of them you know can make money, but don't come here because you won't be able to avail yourself of the same.'
Well, that's what Calipari did. He rented out the Bahamas for 2 days before they played and said, if you want piece of sheep way, here's your chance. There's a big story in The Athletic about it. I'm not making this up.
No. It was and the whole point is these guys, these players.
That was the only way they could do it.
They're here on like educational visas that aren't allowed that don't allow them to make income in certain ways.
Yep.
And so you've got to be able to, you know, for a long time it was kind of like, well, can he fulfill the terms of whatever contracts he has going back home in the summer or something like that. So anyway. You know, it literally being
Where's
the last pick
back?
In the NBA draft would pay him better than coming back to college.
Last pick
almost
in the first
certainly.
Round.
Yes, right. Yes. And even the truth is, even in like the maybe the top, I don't know, 5-10 spots in the second round, a lot of those guys probably still got a guarantee from somebody. Like, a lot of those players probably got a pre-draft guarantee from at least one team that said, if you're still there, we'll take you.
Like the Pacers did with Andrew Nebhart, paid him like the biggest second-round deal
ever. I think Caleb Houston got that with somebody, the kid that played one year at Michigan. I mean, geez, Trayce Jackson-Davis was picked at the, you know, near the end of the second round, and he walked straight into a three-year guaranteed contract, fully vested. You know, and it was like, yeah, he'll play some G League minutes just so we can keep his legs
fresh.
For about two weeks. You know, I think people, you know, like I saw him pop up in the G League a little bit. People said, wow, they sent him down. I said, well, the reason all of these franchises have pulled their G League teams close is because they've got guys at the end of their bench that every once in a while just aren't going to play a lot in a week.
You got to play.
And they want to send them down and just say, hey, go get 30 minutes. And then come back here.
Has nothing to do with their skill. It has to do with their heart rate.
yeah, right. It's,
they don't scrimmage.
It's like when you throw your closer in at the end of a game that you're winning 8-0
because he hasn't pitched in 4 days.
Yeah, and you're just like, right. Well, we can't let him not throw.
Or if you're David Bell, you just put.
But
him
the
in
point
a
is, like you can, you know, you can get. I mean, Trayce and Trayce was a. That was an unusual case. That doesn't happen a ton. But the point is, you can still be in the second round and find yourself in a situation where a team says, if you're still there, we're going to take you, and we'll put you on a guaranteed contract.
When we come back, Zach Osterman's going to tell us about the new Adidas deal and how that factors into the NIL puzzle of mathematic and everything else. You also wrote a big story on Kanan Carlisle. Do I have that name right? I'm trying to get all these names right. I should just write them down. Should write them down somewhere, so we'll get into the interest of that as well. And, of course, the schedule. We'll talk about how that is either important, not important, or anything else, and I'll let you fill me in on any football goings on. A couple interesting movers and shakers here recently at the end of the portal session for football as well. Welcome back, Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour. Hey, our friends in Sultan's Run, they'll get you ready to go for a premium golf visit. They are located in Jasper. It's just about 85 minutes away, and it is a fantastic place, Bermuda grass, and breathtaking. It is absolutely beautiful to play. Take the drive, make the tee time. Well, you can see for yourself. Go to saltansrun.com. You can book your tee time there and see all the great pictures if you have not been there before. Grab a little bite to eat there at the German restaurant, and you can thank us later. Osterman is here. Must be Thursday afternoon. In less than 25 minutes, we will have pregame. Bucks-Pacers Game 6, Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Pacers lead 3-2. Eastern Conference quarterfinals. Go ahead and win tonight, boys. Just go ahead and win. Halliburton's questionable with the bad back. Well, he's had that bad back, and he's played 32 minutes and 34 minutes since showing up on the injury list. So make of that what you will. Pacers are 23-12 after losses this season. That is a good number to look at, but it is a different deal because it's the same opponent
not other games, right? How often do you play the same team back-to-back in the NBA? Doesn't happen very often. A couple times, three times, four times a year. Damian Lillard will play. That's Chris Haynes from TNT. He's telling everybody via his Twitter he's going to play. I think that helps the Pacers because if Lillard's rusty, he's still going to hoist it 25 times. He will not stop shooting.
I would rather – I mean, obviously, if guys are even sort of carrying an injury, then you can't assume you're going to get the best version of whoever. And the Pacers, to be fair, are actually distinctly, I think anyway, suited if they can stay out of foul trouble to guard Giannis because you've got Turner and Siakam. So there's you can kind of split it up a little bit.
And
yeah, but there's always right. the foul depth. But ultimately, right. at that level – you know, it's
Portis has been killing them.
It's so easy to say Bobby Portis is such an underrated player. I hated him in the 21 series against the Hawks.
The only game he hasn't had a double-double is he got thrown out in the first 5 minutes.
But it's so easy to say, oh, everybody's got five fouls. Go use all five fouls. At that level, elite players are only beaten by other elite players. You know, like we talk forever. Well, the strategy with Shaquille O'Neal is to – foul him so he can shoot free throws. Yeah, that really stopped the Lakers from winning three straight titles. Great job. Like you did. That was a wonderful strategy that you employed there. But either way, the point is, I recognize neither one of them is going to be near 100% if they're playing. I would rather Lillard purely because Giannis has the capacity to become the most undefendable player in the league.
Amen.
That's not necessarily guaranteed that he would be. And Lillard, like any elite guard, can also become that player in spurts. Or to your point, he can start cranking, you know, threes and those aren't good shots. Or maybe he gets out there and he tweaks whatever's wrong and he slows down and he tries to play through. But it doesn't work. But like Giannis is the one that when he turns it on, when it really goes, and I saw it up close when the Hawks played him in the Eastern Conference Finals in 21,
yep.
He becomes the most uncontrollable player in the league because he is just such a remarkable combination of athleticism, size, and skill.
The only time the Pacers were defeated by the Bucks in the regular season, he had 64. The other time he had 50.
Yeah, right.
It makes your point. The other thing about
other guys can be more like LeBron is more versatile.
Yeah.
But at what he's good at, like there's no player in the league that can just sort of find that vein of form where he just says, I'm getting to the rim now. And next time, and the next time, and the next time. And you can foul me, and I have the funny free throw thing. And, yeah, I'll miss some of them. But guess what? If I draw 14 fouls in a game, I'm not right. walking away with 8 points at the free throw.
And Giannis scores them from close range where Lillard has to make them sometimes from 30 feet. So, you know what? Pacers favored tonight, as they should be, at home. They do not need to learn a lesson in Game 7. Tonight needs to be the closeout. That's what it has to be. Has to be. Zach Osherman, Indy Stars here. All right, get me caught up on the football. The transfer portal, same thing for football, same thing for basketball. May 1st, you got to be in, got to be out.
Yeah, football's on a slightly different schedule because it's the seasons are different. I forget when the window closes for football.
Not as big a deal, it seems like.
Well, it normally isn't. It's a bigger deal this year. First of all, I think the transfer portal is just a bigger deal in basketball. I had a conversation with somebody about this today. Because rosters are smaller,
right?
And
it's more effective. It affects it.
And like it, and we, I think we talked about this last week too. It is the natural sort of outflow of the regular season, like you, or the college basketball season. So the college basketball season ends, and we go straight into the portal. And the thing about the portal is, you know, if you're Indiana and you have a good portal season, you go from all your fans are furious, everything's burning down, you know, how is anything going to get fixed, to like Indiana's probably going to be, I mean, almost, I would say at this point, things can always change. Guys can come out of portal, whatever. At this point, Indiana's probably top three in the Big Ten next year. Maybe top one. So far, so good. I don't think I would pick them to win the league, but I'm not going to sit here and make judgments until I see everybody's roster at like the end of July or, you know, end of August or whatever. Yes, you can get these big time impact transfers in football, but just the largesse of the numbers, I think, makes it feel a little bit watered down. What the spring portal window kind of was about initially was just the handful of guys on each team that went through spring practice and realized, okay, I'm not going to beat this guy out. I'm not going to beat that guy out. I'm going to play less than I expected. Because you have this you know, this sort of wide open loophole of you can transfer as many times as you want now, so long as you, you know, meet the necessary academic requirements at your various institutions. It was always expected that the spring portal window would be a little bit busier. I think it's probably just I think it has less juice than the basketball portal window, also because it's so far removed from the season. Whereas, again, the basketball portal window is just a natural sort of like we flow from one team is thrilled and everybody else is sad to everybody's going to go figure out how they be the team that's thrilled and everybody else is sad next year. So, you know, it's not as big of a deal as the winter window in terms of raw numbers, and it's probably not always going to get as much traction just because we're not thinking that much about college football in early May. But when you're seeing a few more players from each program, not just Indiana, but Indiana's, you know, not been immune to this, jumping into the portal, this spring window is always expected to be a little bit busier in that regard. And the other thing I would say too, and, you know, I don't know if I'm smart enough to sit here and tell you all the ways this is going to look different. We've talked about like the number of players that have gone in the portal in basketball, how it was up a little bit from last year, didn't quite hit 2,000, which was that everybody thought like sort of the magic, you know, hysteria number was going to be
close.
But this is the last portal cycle of the COVID guys. Your players still working on a COVID year will be much further and fewer between starting next year.
And that'll naturally thin the herd.
And again, like I'm not smart enough to sit here beyond yes, sort of saying I think that, you know, we're going to finally kind of get over some of the roster holes and some of the developmental hiccups and things that came with guys and where they had to go during COVID and all that. Beyond sort of saying I think we'll see numbers deflate just a little bit, I'm not smart enough to say how else it affects certain things, but I do think it affects certain things because you're going to have, I think, fewer experienced players that teams can pull. And then if you're a redshirt sophomore corner that got some decent snaps last season, but you see your team go out and pull a fifth-year senior corner that had a whole bunch of snaps last year, you're going to be thinking, man, like I was already second team in the spring, now I might be third team. I think some of that might die down a little bit.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, live in the studio. Woj, Adrian Wojnarowski is reporting. Antetokounmpo out, Lillard in. So there you go, Pacer fans. You don't have to worry about the Greek Freak tonight. Let's hope you don't have to worry about the Greek Freak on Saturday either. All right, big football news. Is there any Kobe Minor left? Was that a deal, not a deal? How does that work? Just because he's played a lot doesn't mean he can't get in the transfer portal. Is that something we worry about, or is it just part of the natural attrition, like you mentioned, playing time or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you worry about it if we get to the fall and it turns out that Indiana really could have used Kobe Minor. I don't think he was a stud last season. I think he was honorable mention all Big Ten. I was a little surprised to kind of see him land there. But the flip side is
he had some big splash plays.
He had enough moments where you thought, like, yeah, there's a player there, there's talent, can he tap into it? You know, he wasn't running with the first team defense at the spring game. I think that was Jameer Johnson, and I'm struggling to remember the other corner. It might have been Jamari Sharp.
Yeah.
Either way, the point is he seemed to be second team there. It does seem like Indiana's kind of jumped in on some corners since. I think they took a transfer from Austin Peay. I think they'd very much like to get D'Angelo Pons, who was a true freshman All-American last year at James Madison. The problem with that is they've got some healthy competition for him. Some big hitters in the Big Ten and the SEC also calling for him. So the point is it's kind of one of those where Indiana's had, I think it's fair to say, a lot of success, at least on paper, in the portal since Kurt Cignetti came in. You know, Curtis Rourke, a totally remade running back room, a hugely deepened wide receiver room.
Keeping Donovan McCauley.
Some really important retentions, some really useful adds on the offensive line. I think getting Aiden Fisher, if he stays healthy, you know, just because you never want to pin too much on one player, but he seems very important to Bryant Haynes, Indiana's defensive coordinator, is kind of the coach on the field, so to speak. Sometimes it's easy if you have a run of success in the portal to forget that it works both ways, and every once in a while you're going to lose, even under the best of circumstances, every once in a while you're going to lose a player you don't want to. And, you know, maybe Kurt Cignetti had a frank conversation with Kobe Miner and said, hey, listen, I think we're going to be bringing a couple guys in, and I'm not sure what kind of playing time you have there. And if I'm not mistaken, his brother also went in the portal.
Facts.
Who did not play a lot last season, really, if at all. But that might impact it a little bit too, you know, in terms of, well, if my brother's not here, then, you know, maybe part of the appeal was coming to play with my brother, because his brother went to UTEP and he went to Texas Tech before they transferred to Indiana. So I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth. All I can say, generally speaking, is, you know, everybody watching the portal with some sort of excitement about what might happen next needs to remember that the portal is very much a live by the sword, die by the sword thing. Every once in a while, the portal is going to take away. It can giveth, but every once in a while, it will take. And, you know, maybe that's what happens with a couple of these guys that have popped in for Indiana.
Tomorrow, we will talk about the Assembly Ball outfit. We will also talk about the Adidas deal. We don't have enough time to get to all that today, so we'll do that tomorrow with Zach Osterman. Schedule's out. Hey, West Coast road trip. Which one you get this year? Well, you get a little of both, don't you?
Isn't it basically like just two and like two, straight down the middle? Like everybody either got, I think, USC and UCLA, or
travel partners like the old days?
Yeah, Washington and Oregon, which makes you wonder if when we actually see the schedules, like dates and times and stuff, makes you sort of wonder if the league is going to try and send Indiana out for a Thursday night game at Oregon and a Saturday afternoon game at Washington.
Yes.
So you miss less class time.
Totally. And everybody flies private anyhow. Doesn't right. matter. So
those are long private flights, though.
Well, they are. But my point is, you don't get stuck at an airport. You don't get stuck waiting for the...
No, sometimes you do, but yeah.
The general point is, you're not going to oversell your seats, lose your luggage, do any of that stuff.
Right,
You can come and go as you please. You don't have to wait for the 6 a.m. flight. You can leave at 2 in the morning. That's what happens. Well, you know, the red eye. You get back and all that goes on. I think that will be interesting as well. The schedule now with 18 teams is 20 games. Still, seventh year running in that. The stat I saw... Purdue has an 8.5-game lead on everybody since they've gone to 20 games over Illinois. Illinois is the second best during that run. That's from Chris Foreman's notes from Purdue Basketball, so I know it's legit.
Yeah, Chris is a good dude.
And, and Purdue's going to reload, and we'll worry about the season later. But instead of 6-6-4, do I have that right? Yes. It is now 7-7-3. One play at home. One play away, and then the 3-2 plays, of course, it's Indiana and Purdue. The Hoosiers also got Penn State and Ohio State. One plays, they go to, let me see if I can do this off the top of my head. They go to Iowa. They go to Breslin Center.
Yeah.
They go to, no, I can't do it off the top of my head.
Here, I'll get it up while we're talking.
Minnesota, Nebraska.
Michigan's only at home, I know that. And then the LA schools are only at home here. I Twittered it.
So it should be.
I know I Twittered.
I have it right in front of me.
Do, 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 do.
Away only. Iowa, Michigan State, right. Nebraska, Northwestern, Wisconsin, Oregon, and Washington. So you get the big West Coast roadie to Seattle and Eugene. Fine. Careful with the axe, Eugene. And hey, look, we get to go back to the Kohl Center. We've had so much fun there over the years, and the Breslin Center. I don't know what I don't know what to make of Iowa right now, but Indiana has not had the worst success in that building, that's for sure. And Pinnacle Bank is interesting.
That's one of those programs I wonder about in an NIL era. Like, I mean, and I've always
they
looked
spent
at
it
Iowa
all on Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, well,
then she's gone.
You know, I mean, it obviously it's a football school by trade. It has had a lot of basketball success in terms of heritage. It has not been anywhere near as good as it was in the 70s and 80s anytime recently. I mean, basically, you know, since the turn of the century, Iowa basketball has really not done much of anything at all. And it just I wonder if that is a fan base where it's going to be hard to engage at a level that moves the needle, especially when you're in a conference with Indiana, UCLA, Illinois, Michigan State, Maryland, places that shouldn't have trouble with that. And in a weird way, I also sort of have a theory that in a weird way, I think it's harder to raise NIL money for basketball and football environments than it is the other way around. Because, like, if you're Indiana, like, first of all, getting people, you know, having a very real number for basketball – you know, the tangible effect of that is immediate. It's here come five stars. Here come elite transfers. You got your pick of point guards in the portal. You got your pick of centers in the portal because you have the and it's like, well, that, you know, in football you can have that too, but there's 11 guys on the field on both sides of the ball and 53 are going to play at any, you know, in any given game. Whereas, I mean, Indiana remade its rotation with five guys, and so that it, there's a level of sort of energy or you know, sort of, I guess, excitement you can generate about basketball a lot quicker. Again, I think that's one reason why the transfer portal is more compelling for basketball. But I think the other part of it is
a quicker fixer.
When you're at a place like Indiana, I think that, you know, just going from kind of a modest amount of NIL money to saying, hey, new coach, let's really put our weight behind this and just get up to a competitive number. Doesn't have to go crazy. Just get to a competitive number.
Let you know you're in the
and
game.
See if we can't grab some game changing pieces, keep a couple guys that might otherwise leave. And hey, listen, the goal here ultimately is let's get to 6-6 and let's do that. And let's consolidate around that for a couple years. And then let's see if we can get to 7 and then 8. But like the flip side, the other way around is when you're at a football school, football just needs so much more because you're talking about so many more athletes.
It's just a truly numbers and game. Isn't it?
I mean, yeah, it's, and I don't, when I say so much more, I don't know that I necessarily just mean cash. I also mean just like attention. You've got to find a way to engage dozens of football players in the NIL space if you're going to do it at the level that a place like Iowa is going to, much less in Ohio State or, you know, in Alabama or whatever. And then the other part of that is it's not just the numbers in terms of money. It's the numbers in terms of the athletes you engage with. And then it's also just like the work that goes into it and getting to the other side of it and saying like, okay, so does anybody, you know, is anybody jazzed up to get behind another sport now? And maybe you're right in the sense that, I mean, maybe having this like generational college, women's college player created a bit of a gravitational pull that everybody else kind of had to live in the shadow of. I don't know. But I look at Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, these basketball programs that are just kind of stuck between, hey, you know, any success we have. Like if Penn State goes to the tournament, everybody's thrilled, you know. And then if Indiana.
And Bryce Jordan's still empty.
And then if Scott Dolson says, let's make ourselves one of the five richest NIL programs in the country because you all have been waiting long enough for the kind of success that this can bring us, you know, potentially right away if it's done, if it's handled correctly. But those teams that are just kind of stuck in the middle, like I don't know what they do. I don't know how you know, if you can get a dynamic young coach, that's maybe the way to do it. You know, somebody that's really exciting, somebody that's really engaging and can do a lot of that stuff.
But you still got
to
win.
And in basketball, so many of those coaches either move up to bigger jobs or, frankly, move to the NBA. So
that is true, and they do. Indiana will play at home only. Illinois, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, Rutgers, UCLA.
Not going to the rack
USC.
This year. That's sad.
No Jersey Mike's for you. Yeah. Well, not at least in
Well, they have Jersey Mike's. They have Jersey Mike's. Indiana caters Jersey Mike's for some home games. But no.
Good point. No rack.
No rack.
No rack 'em, stack 'em, and pack 'em. That's Zach Osterman from the Indy Star. We'll get to the Adidas deal tomorrow. Big Show Friday. Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, making his every Friday visit with us. This Friday, though, a little bit different. Graduation Friday here on the campus of Bloomington. The graduate ceremony, just wrapping up, I would think. And the undergrads go tomorrow night, 7:45. So if you're wondering why traffic is everywhere and it's super busy, well, this is just part of a tremendously busy weekend. Throw in a little Kentucky Derby, throw in a little Cinco de Mayo, and boy, we've got a weekend here in Bloomington. So hang on with both hands, kids. We'll have Reds baseball for you coming up 5:40. Yes, that is not a typo. 5:40 tonight for a 6:10 first pitch. The Great American Ballpark, the Baltimore Orioles are in town. But before we do all that, let's talk some hoops thoughts with the beat writer for Indiana basketball at the Indy Star, at Zach Osterman. All right, Pacers big winners last night. Hicks and Knicks will start on Monday night, as we know. But the college basketball season never slows down anymore. They've taken a page out of the NFL book, which I think is entirely smart. And we learned today the home and away opponents for Indiana basketball. We forgot to talk about yesterday a little bit. Indiana, we also know, is going to the Bahamas for the Battle for Atlantis. That will take place Wednesday, Thursday, Friday over the Thanksgiving weekend. So even though Indiana did not have the perhaps greatest season last season, I don't think anybody's going to argue differently on that, they're still in a highfalutin, big-time TV event. And, well, that's just part of the cycle. Now the transfer portal and putting the team together is there. Adidas re-signs. It's not as bad as it looks, but you know, no one's saying last year we should hang any kind of sign, banner, or put that team in the Hall of Fame. I get that.
You know, it's funny. I just cut, literally just got off a podcast with my good friend Jeff Borzello over at ESPN, and we were talking, obviously, about what Indiana's done this spring, but we were also kind of comparing it to, I think the last time I had him on was around this time a year ago when McKenzie and Bacco committed, and sort of, you know, what to make of an Indiana that had kind of been remade around getting Xavier Johnson back and bringing in McKenzie and Bacco and Khalil Ware. And, you know, we were kind of talking about sort of the maybe the hesitations we had around Indiana then and the extent to which it just sort of felt like Indiana turned into kind of what we thought it might be, which was just a, you know, a decent team. I would say, they went 19-14. They went 10-10 in the Big Ten. I don't think it's unfair to call them decent, but a team that never, ever showed the capacity to have a gear beyond that. You know, a team that spent basically the entire season in second gear and never really got out of it. And you know, that was good enough to at least not have an embarrassing season. I mean, I think I've dropped this line on you, but Mike Nieslick said it at the Big Ten tournament that Michigan had the season Indiana fans think they had. And if you look at Michigan, like, not only did they go 3-17 in the league, but if you look at that, what was it? I think it was a 9-game losing streak. They ended the season on. They only lost two of those games by fewer than 10 points. So, I mean, like, that's a car crash of a season. That is a disaster of a season. Indiana was just kind of a team with some talent that had enough to win some games and not enough to ever go up a level. It feels like this Indiana team that has taken shape through the portal process over these last few weeks probably is going to have those gears. Now, can it go up them? That's, you know, that's up to the players. It's up to Mike Woodson and how he puts all the pieces together. But I think Indiana is going to be a team that at least has the talent, the capacity to go up at that level.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, checking in here. And the capacity to go up is really what makes Indiana right now the program. Not the capacity to go up perhaps into the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, but they keep getting players. They keep getting invited to these national tournaments. And obviously the renewal with Adidas, how big of a deal is that? I know you wrote about it earlier this week, but what should we read into that as fans? We still matter?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I have sort of a multi-layered...
I'm here for it, buddy. I'm here for it.
Like, first of all, I do think these... these deals are going to be changing in the NIL era because it's no longer so simple as, you know, pay for access so that high-level college basketball players are essentially promoting your brand, because now you can have those one-to-one relationships with these players. That doesn't mean you have no use for the, you know, for the partnerships with the schools. It's just, it means that the nature of the relationship has changed. And the flip side is the school kind of needs something different too. Indiana's getting big, fat Big Ten paychecks. It doesn't need to squeeze every penny till it screams in other areas. What it needs now maybe though is a little bit more exposure, a little bit more marketing. Hey, I know people had the opinions they had on the fear of God stuff that Indiana wore that Sunday. Was it Northwestern possibly or Nebraska? I can't remember which. But, you know, Indiana needs maybe Adidas to see Indiana as that level of a partner where they're going to take their good stuff and they're going to give it to a Kansas or an Indiana or a Louisville, you know, first. I know there are some people that have some legitimate gripes about Adidas, that they feel like merchandising and apparel availability can be better, and it probably can be. I know there are some people that want, they just sort of wish Indiana would go to Nike, but I would say there, you know, it kind of takes two to tango. And while I don't know the specifics of any kind of proposals that different you know, competitors, and there's really only two of them anymore. Under Armour has faded into the mist. You know, any kind of proposal Nike made to Indiana, but like Nike's already got Kentucky, UConn, Duke, UNC, like
Michigan. You know,
Nike doesn't need to make bold plays in the college basketball space. Would you rather be Adidas's priority, or would you rather be Nike's option? You know, if you kind of understand what I'm saying. And I just think that ultimately there is some value in continuity. I will be curious to see what the exact terms are, but you know, like you look at Kansas, for example, they trumpeted this whole sort of like 11 year, $14 million a year deal with Adidas. I think it was about 5 years ago they signed it. But if you read the fine print, they got about $11 million in cash payment each of the first two seasons. I think that was an agreement to basically front the cost of some facilities upgrades. And every year after that, that payment has fallen to somewhere between $3 million and $4.5 million or $4 million and $5.5 million. And $7.5 million annually of Adidas is paid out to Kansas is either in the form of product or marketing consideration.
Well, let me jump in there, because I know fans will get confused, and I'm not getting confused. But when you have a deal with, let's say you're Adidas and I'm IU, you come to the table and Kansas says, "Well, I need stuff for facilities." Does Indiana say, "Well, if you could help offset some of our NIL costs, that would be great"? I don't even know how any of this works.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, I think everybody's still figuring out kind of the how to streamline the sort of like, you know, you're an Adidas NIL partner in college, and that's what keeps you loyal in the pros and that kind of stuff. But, you know, Adidas announced a few high profile NIL deals for college basketball players a couple years ago. There were four men's players, two of them were Indiana players, and a third was a Kansas player. So, you know, yes, those are the areas where it helps, you know, and those are the areas where, you know, someone like Scott Dolson might say, "Hey, listen, I have actually really less need for cash payment here than I do for the idea of access or exposure or, yeah, some sort of kind of, you know, the sort of silent guarantee or whatever you want to say of, you know, kind of, you know, NIL partnerships for some of my athletes, whatever it might be." And again, you know, that it's one of those things where there's a decent chance you're a lot more likely to get that out of Adidas, with whom you have had this long-term partnership, with whom, you know, a company that probably sees you as a little bit more important, you know, on its basketball side in particular than Nike might, because Nike's already got all these other basketball schools. I just think that like the both sides need slightly different things from these apparel arrangements now than they did, you know, maybe 8 to 10 years ago. And I just think that Indiana's is probably going to reflect that.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, joining us today, talking a little Hoosier hoops, the off-season fun stuff. We know there are two scholarships left. The portal is churning and churning. Not a lot of activity. The one name I did see that was brought up, and we'll get back to Adidas here in just a minute, was Alex Hemingway. He played at Castle High School at one point. Is he still scheduled for a visit? I talked to our great friend John Blau down at Clemson about him. That's where he applied his trade previously. Is there any momentum in that direction?
I think so. It's, you know, Indiana's not his only kind of targeted visit, but it does sound like
he. Would I see Maryland too, somewhere else, Big Ten?
And I think maybe Rutgers, possibly.
Okay.
I'm not totally sure on that. But I think that, you know, from kind of the moment he hit the portal, there was a feeling that he was probably going to find his way to Indiana, at least for a visit at some point. Now, listen, you know, Indiana, as we've discussed, is starting to kind of get into, you know, a space where there are just not a lot of spots, you know, not a lot of minutes, not a ton of huge roles left to fill. And so you are going to have to be, you know, you're going to have to be comfortable if you're, let's just use Alex Hemingway as the example here. You're going to have to be comfortable with the idea that, you know, your role may be smaller. And that's where it does become a little bit harder to.
Well, let me jump in here
because as we've said before, like, not a lot of guys go into the portal looking to play less. But the flip side is, if you can find a guy that is willing to do that, well, someone like Hemingway, who is really experienced at a high major level, who has a skill that very clearly translates to in high major basketball, his shooting ability. He brings you something in practices. He provides you depth in an area where you need it. He's a guy that if you call on him, that, you know, he's the sort of player that you can absolutely see a path to, hey, somebody's injured, somebody else is in foul trouble, and here he comes, hits four threes off the bench on a night when you really need him. It's just about making sure that everybody, once you get into these situations, everybody kind of feeling like they're being dealt with on the level, if you understand what I'm saying, and nobody's being sold, you know, something that an opportunity right. that really won't ever be.
We there. Talked about yesterday about that timing, how many basketballs, how many minutes, how many everything else, and Hemingway has only played 3 games last year. He only played 20 games the season before that. So he has had I don't want to say a chronic injury history, but you mentioned yesterday, and this is what all tied this together when I was sitting in bed staring at the ceiling at 3 a.m. last night. Maybe it's a season where he can get healthy and then contribute next. I don't know the details, but what I do know is he has not played a ton of games in the last 2 seasons.
That's fair. And again, it's going to be about what he wants. I mean, is he a player that, as you say, he hasn't played a lot? You know, he never maybe found like a really consistent role at Clemson. I think I'm looking for his overall numbers here. I mean, he appeared in 31 games in 2022. Other than that, he never appeared in more than 24 games in a season. You know, he's never used more than 15% of possessions across the course of a whole season when he's on the floor. You know, only 3 of his seasons did he attempt at least 53 pointers. So if he's one of those guys that went into the portal saying, hey, I've got 1 year left, I want to use it to go someplace where I'm going to play a little bit more, then yeah, Indiana might not be that place. But if he's someone who says, hey, listen, I'd like a change of scenery. Indiana's close to home. You know, they've got a chance to be pretty good next season. I could be part of something special for my last year of college. You know, again, it's just about making sure guys are comfortable with whatever role, and being very honest, I think, too, with whatever role is kind of being presented to them.
I don't want to call it the Matt Roth role, but I'll call it the Matt Roth role so people have an idea of kind of what we're talking about. You're not going to get a ton of minutes, but when you get in there, you got 1 job and you're pretty good at that. So if you can knock a few down, that goes a long way to expanding your role doing that. So again, 2 scholarships left. We'll keep an eye on the portal, which is closed for entering but is wide open for exiting. So make sure you jump out whenever it is you jump out. The other part of Indiana and the I don't want to say, maybe it is the lore, maybe it is the legacy. You keep getting invited to Maui. You keep getting invited to play in Madison Square Garden. Now you're going to the Bahamas. That's the first time for the Bahamas, is that right? Do I have that right?
I believe so, yeah.
So
and keep in mind, this event's not super old. I think I want to say it started years? Like in the late 2000s.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like Maui or something like it, the Diamond Head Classic, 2011 was the first year that it, and interestingly enough, Harvard beat UCF in that first
year. Well, it's evolved, hasn't it? Gotten a little bit better.
Yeah, but the next year, Duke beats Louisville. So, okay. You know, that's the final the next year. And then Villanova, Wisconsin, Syracuse, Baylor, Nova again, Virginia, Michigan. They didn't play it for COVID. Baylor, Tennessee, Villanova. So anyway, the point is, yeah, I mean, it is not that old of an event, and it's always seemed to trend a little bit more Nike for whatever reason. Like Maui has always seemed like it made sure there was space for the Kansases, the Indianas, the Louisvilles. You know, when UCLA was still an Adidas school, I'm not sure if they went to Under Armour. I can't remember if they came back to Adidas or they went back to Nike when they ditched their Under Armour contract. But I think that, you know, it for whatever reason, Atlantis, to me at least, I could be wrong about this, but it seemed like it sort of trended more Nike, and Maui trended a little bit more Adidas. But I think all that stuff's kind of fallen away here. And frankly, I think Indiana got into this as much as anything else because Indiana pressed to be invited. Indiana went down to the Bahamas for that preseason tour in 2021. They had a great experience at Atlantis. I think, you know, I mean, I think Mike Woodson saw the value of, hey, I can take my kids to the Bahamas. It's not Maui, but it's pretty close. And it's a much shorter flight. And the time change isn't something that's going to disrupt my non-conferences or anything like that. I think Indiana really sort of expressed a much heavier interest after that Bahamas trip in 2021.
And the other part of this equation is, well, no one wants to hear this, but it hurts, but it's true. Well, Indiana hasn't won much in the last 15 years, but they still get invited to all this. Is that the pat on the back for the fan base? Is that the pat on the back for the program? Because when Indiana's invited, I think they flat out, they show up. They sell tickets and show up, and that's what these events want.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's for the fan base in particular. You know, the debate that goes around all the time is, you know, are Indiana fans unrealistic? Are they too prone to panic? You know, are they too, you know, is the atmosphere too toxic? And sometimes I think it can get that way. The flip side is, you know, and I'm not trying to be flippant about this, you know, there aren't that many fan bases in college basketball that could be delivered the last 20 years that Indiana fans have gotten and stick around at the level that Indiana fans have and still be invested at the level that Indiana fans are, whether it's with their dollars or their attendance or their interest or their energy. You know, I would challenge anyone who thinks Indiana fans are, you know, crazy or unrealistic to tell Kentucky to go 37 years without a national title and see how their fans react. But then the other part of it, though, is, you know, Indiana, like Kentucky, like Duke, like UNC, is one of those places where fans won't change their expectations and their engagement level, even when, you know, maybe that ultimately the return is not coming back the other way at the level that they need it to. Like, if Indiana had the 70s, 80s, and 90s, if Iowa had had that run, and you know, let's be fair, they weren't crazy far off it. I mean, like, Lute Olson had some really good years, Dr. Tom Davis had some really good years, but if Iowa had the 70s, 80s, and 90s that Indiana had, and then Iowa had the 2000s and 2010s, and to some extent here 2020s that Indiana's had, I think Iowa fans just would have ebbed away. But Indiana is one of those places where the interest remains strong, even after, you know, a couple decades of, I don't think it's unfair to say pretty inconsistent results. And that's, you know, the evidence you get for that is how often Indiana's in prime time, or how often, yeah, Indiana's invited to an event like this, or Indiana's at the Garden, or whatever it might be.
Zach Osterman, IndyStar, IndyStar.com. Support local journalism. Buy a subscription today. Follow along at Zach Osterman on the X. And, well, here we are in May, getting ready to roll. We have a tremendously busy month with baseball, Indy in the month of May, Kentucky Derby, Cinco de Mayo, IU graduation, local schools getting out for summer. The list keeps going on and on and on. And basketball will be involved in all of that. And we always appreciate your weekly updates, buddy. Have a great weekend, and we will get caught up with you next week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always, Class.
That's my buddy Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. Zach joins us every Thursday and Friday in the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour. And as we move on here on a big show Friday, well, it's a quick one today. We are out of here. So enjoy an early dose of Reds baseball. Our pregame starts at 5:40 with Tommy Thrall, and we'll have first pitch from Hunter Green, 6:10 tonight at the Great American Ballpark. We're back with the Reds tomorrow, 6:10 for 6:40, the 150th Kentucky Derby. That'll be a big part of tomorrow's sporting news as well. And then the Reds and Orioles wrap up their three-game series, 3:40 for 4:10 on Sunday. Pacers on Monday. I return on Monday as well. Have a great weekend. Cincinnati Reds baseball is next.